I'm speaking today with Councilmember Melissa Noriega, who is the incumbent in at-large number 3. First question I'd like to ask you, I mean, you are now serving, it's actually been just a little bit more than a year since you were elected in the special election, I guess 2 years, a full term, since you were elected in the special election in 2007. Would you say that your experience in council so far, you know, a full term in, has been what you thought it would be?
You know, it's really a privilege to be able to do this, and you know, I don't have an answer. Is it what you thought it would be? I feel like I've been able to do some meaningful work. I'm the chair of public safety. I've been able to dig into issues that have to do with money, in particular with the police department. You know, I've been able to get some things accomplished, and I feel like I've gotten a clear sense of how things work, which I think is really the challenge of your first term.
How long would you say it took you to get to that point?
You know, it's funny. I noticed this when I was in the legislature. There's sort of a six-week click, and then there's something that's a little farther down the road. There's the point where you get up every morning and you're not, you know, really concerned you're going to miss something. You know, all of a sudden you sort of have a feel of what, you know, what's going on at the council table, what your responsibilities are. And then there's another point where you get to, maybe after almost a full term, where you're beginning to be willing to speak out on things and take some risks and tackle some challenges.
Okay. Well, as you say, you're the chair of the Public Safety and Homeland Security Committee, and that's in charge of things like police and fire, and those are a big part of the budget and also kind of in the news lately. So let's talk about a couple of those issues. With HFD, obviously, there's been the whole allegations of racism. There's been now a protracted shouting match, if you will, between a member of council and the president of the Professional Firefighters Association. Give me an idea. It seems like the story has kind of receded into the background a little because of that. Where do we stand on this? What is the city doing to investigate the original charges, and how bad is it, and how does it look from where you sit?
First, the actual incidents are being investigated by the police department. We have a unit that does investigations, the Office of Investigations, and there's a full-blown police investigation going on several
kind of like an internal affairs investigation.
Yes, and that is not public, nor are we privy to the to that. But that's ongoing, and they will get to the bottom.
As to like who did it and what.
Yes, in particular, the incident with the women occurred in a fire station with limited access. You had to have a key card swipe to get in, and there are only, you know, 10, 15 people that had access. So we will get to the bottom of those issues. In addition to that, I think having several things happen at once has really gotten the attention of the leadership in the fire department, as well as the attention of the folks in the city. You know, it's easy to brush off an isolated incident and say, well, no. You know, when you have one thing after another, you really have to address it. The police department is working with several law firms that the mayor has asked us to allow him to hire. People are saying, why law firms? They're folks that specialize in employment law and EEOC kinds of things. And what they're looking at, they're doing an assessment to figure out if we have a pervasive problem or whether we have pockets of concerns and what kinds of levels of concern are there, you know. I will tell you that my sense of things is that there may be a larger issue going on. You know, it used to be that being a fireman or a firefighter was dragging 200 pounds of hose behind you. And what's happening now is that we can have as many as 800 calls a day, and 80% of those are EMT calls. Now, to be an EMT takes a little less physical ability to lift and carry and do. There are changes going on. We haven't had women in the department very long. We haven't had the focus on the medical and health care very long. And they're shifting. And I think some of this is about that. Now, if we had a disaster, everyone would need to be able to put on their suits and go to work. And so where the line is between how much ability you need to have to climb, to carry, to pull, to lift, to run into a burning building or high rise, and how much you need to be able to deal in an ambulance with a heart patient. You know, where is that line? But some of what's going on, I think, is really about just changes in culture that's occurring that I think is a natural progression of that.
Do you think the current leadership of HFD is equipped to handle this? There are people who are calling for changes at the top.
I think that the current leadership is willing to deal with it and is working very hard to do so. I think that they get it. I think the first thing that's important is, do you get it? Yeah, they get it. You know, everybody gets it. I think that Chief Borisky and the command staff are very concerned and are trying to work diligently with the folks we have doing investigations and the people that we're doing assessments with. Is everybody appropriate in the spot they're in? I don't know about that. But I wouldn't tell you that I think a blanket wiping out of the leadership is an appropriate response to this.
Okay.
I think they were perhaps a little slow to assume bad things. And I think that we're in a different place now.
Okay. Let's shift over to the police department. Recently, the president of the Houston Police Officers Union has called on Mayor White and Chief Hurt to change a longstanding policy in the city of police officers not inquiring about someone's immigration status or citizenship status when they pull them over. The mayor and the chief disagree with this. You know, first of all, where do you stand, and you know, what, if anything, needs to be done about this?
This is an issue that's white hot right now. People have a lot of concern about it. They're angry about it. I think it's important that we examine the facts. One of the things they talk about is Houston being a sanctuary city. I think that's a divisive and incendiary term that was thrown out there to deliberately provoke people. What I think the reality is that Houston has a lot of work and has had a lot of immigrants that have addressed construction trades, restaurants, different kinds of jobs here. And so we have a large population. In addition to that, we're shorthanded. We do not have as many boots on the ground as we need. Immigration is a federal responsibility, both for determining what the rules are and for enforcing it. Right now, if someone is arrested and taken to jail, we check their immigration status, and we turn them over to ICE when their status warrants it. And sometimes ICE doesn't take them because they can't manage everyone we give them now. we are having officers trained to do a little more than that. There's a several-week training that goes into using the federal database so that we can check it instead of having ICE check it for us.
And that's the 287G program?
That's part of it. That's the database part of it. The part that's controversial is challenging everyone that's stopped for anything. Class A, Class B, Class C misdemeanor. What that has the potential to mean is that someone gets stopped for a taillight or an inspection sticker being expired and someone asks about their immigration status, they can take them down and have them deported. The upshot of that, what happens out of that, is that you have people unwilling to come forward as witnesses. You have folks concerned that they should hide from the police, and so we don't get the value of the community relationships that are so important with neighborhood policing. This has come out of several incidents where we have had officers shot or killed by folks that should have been deported. I think it's important to put the responsibility for that where it belongs. Folks whose visas expire, people that we haven't had contact with and arrested, if someone else didn't deport them, that's difficult. But what the officers have expressed to me is that they want the discretion that if they think someone's a bad actor to pursue a farther, you know, to go farther with checking them out and taking them down. You know, it's a question of probable cause and whether they really think they're a bad guy. The immigrant advocate's fear is that some folks will think everyone is a bad guy if they're brown, and they will profile. And I think that's a concern. You know, I think it's an enormously complex issue. It does seem to me that the police need a little more discretion, but I do not think that addressing everyone's immigration status every time they have some interaction with the police is appropriate. We will have whole chunks of the city, which is almost half Hispanic, shut down. I need to say also that an immigration violation is something on the order of having a judgment against you in court, you know, where you have to pay someone in a civil proceeding. It is not a criminal offense in and of itself. And what the advocates will tell you is that there are small children at home that get left alone. There are just lots of fallout. Even perhaps more important than that is that if you address this issue on the street, it takes an officer out of circulation for hours. And so every time you deal with an immigration violation, when you've had a traffic stop or something, that police person is off the street for the rest of the day. And we just don't have enough people to do that.
Well, in fact, there have been news stories about how many police officers Houston has. It's been known for a while. We haven't had the number of cadet classes that people would like. Of course, the flip side of that is that, you know, the cost of HPD has gone up, what, something like 40% over the past couple of years, and that's without really adding any police officers. It's pension costs, it's salary costs. It seems like every candidate I talk to or hear from at forums is talking about adding more police, maintaining the police budget, so on and so forth. Nobody really talks about how to pay for it. So let me ask you, you know, how much does an extra cadet class cost the city? And realistically, in this budget environment, given that nobody is talking about raising taxes, how do we pay for more police?
That's not an easy question. You've already figured that part out. We just lost a COPS grant where we applied for 4 cadet classes of 75, and that would have been $49 million. Now, that was over, I think, 3 years, but that may not be exactly right.
I mean, the irony to that is one reason why we were turned down for it is because our crime rate isn't that bad.
That's right. And there were the parameters of the grant, the requirements, favored communities that were in economic downturn, which we were not. We can see things coming, and we aren't doing quite as well right now in terms of jobs as we were earlier in the year. But, you know, in the state of Arizona, where they got a bunch of these grants, they're talking about selling the Capitol and leasing it back for the House and Senate to meet in. I think they're in serious trouble. So we're not in that kind of shape. But Dallas got their money. So we're not, there's something we're not doing right. Would be easy to dismiss as sort of just something to throw out there, but there is an enormous amount of federal money moving around right now. I think we have got to get better at getting it. I went 2 weeks ago to Washington in a last-ditch effort to save the COPS grant. I had a chance to meet with all of the delegation. They were very helpful. I also had a chance to see what kinds of things the city could do to do a better job of scooping that up. There's several things that I think would help. One is getting more grants. There were about 8 or 10 Department of Justice grants that were in the Q4 that we may get some of, particularly ones that are written in such a way that they favor places that are having serious struggles economically. And not all of them did. We had something like 8 pages of a matrix of stimulus money that we're going after, and that's real money, and we need to get it going. We do that well because we spend the money. We're able to document it. They, you know, when it's done, we're accountable. And we've got to work harder at getting that. In addition to that, I think we need to address some of these things regionally. HGAC has money for certain kinds of things. And what happens is, particularly now, there are different kinds of projects coming in under budget because people are bidding more competitively. And so then money comes back up, and we're able to grab that and use it more effectively. And I think that there's going to be some recapture of some funds that might have gone to someone else and they didn't use it all, and they have to give it back. I mean, when they give the money back, it goes somewhere. But I think we have got to get more serious about federal monies that we haven't had to have. And that's a question, that's grant writing, that's governmental relations, that's lobbying in Washington, that's community help from groups like the Partnership, and the county, where we do joint projects. We've just got to get better at that.
I mean, speaking of the county, another thing that everyone likes to talk about is for HPD to operate better with other law enforcement agencies within the county. You've got the sheriff, you've got constables, you've got HISD and Metro, and you know others. You know, probably your Westview and other small town police departments that are in and around. Why is it the case that they don't already operate better with other law enforcement agencies? And what really does need to be done to make it happen?
You know, I just met with a committee with the Greater Houston Partnership this morning talking about that very issue and how we might do that. You know, with technology, we have a different opportunity to have a common table for everyone to sit at, even if there are geographic issues. But, you know, they're metaphors for that. We just bought a huge buy of radios. And the interoperability between the radios is a metaphor for all of it. You know, it used to be we had equipment that wouldn't talk to each other. Well, that's a big miss. That's an obvious thing to fix. But there are other versions of that. when you report a crime in this neighborhood, you might tell the constable. And you have HPD in the constable's office both collecting data, but they don't necessarily have a common place they dump that. And our real-time crime center will eventually get to the point where it encompasses the county. We're working on that. I think it's terribly important. I would like to see at-large council members have a more regional focus because somebody needs to look at that. There are a lot of places where regional cooperation would benefit the city of Houston. In the past, we've sort of been the biggest gorilla on the block, and we haven't felt like we had to do that. I don't know that that was conscious, but it sort of played out that way. I think we've got to play better with others, and I think there will be terrific payoff for it if we do it. But doing some things with at-large members, having a broader vision, I think would be helpful there.
What's your assessment of Chief Hurt's term in office? As you know, Controller Parker has publicly stated that she, you know, will hire a different police chief. She has been critical of him. What is your assessment of him as HPD chief, and how would you like to see the next chief be like him or not like him?
I think that whoever the new mayor is will probably pick their own chief. I think that's the prerogative of a new mayor. It's like picking a cabinet. And I think that anybody that comes in is probably going to do that. And I think folks like Chief Hurt know that. Having said that, I will tell you that I think he has done a terrific job of bringing forward an awful lot of things that need to be addressed and making them more transparent. One of the things that had been said that I had heard was that there was all this money that went into HPD, like overtime money and that kind of thing. And where did it go? And there's a monthly book that comes out with very careful detail where we know, and we meet monthly and we look at where that money goes. When I have my public safety meetings, a different department reports every month about what they're doing with their money, what challenges, what they've learned, what they need. That level of transparency is actually there. You have to go look for it a little bit. I mean, it's not something we trumpet on the TV. And some of the documents have security issues, so they're not generally available. But it really does allow you to see where folks are deployed, what's going on with the overtime money. And I think he's done a really good job of putting some financial people and data folks in to tell that. I think he's done a great job with the Real-Time Crime Center. Folks talk about CompStat. That's a brand. That's New York's brand. We have our own brand, and we're doing what that is. We're looking at where hotspots are. We're having people be able to call in and get a conversation going about what's going on in their corner of the world, and you can see it on a map. You can GPS it. You can look folks up. You can, you know, organize chases. You can do whatever. That's what I'm talking about that needs to expand to the whole county or maybe the whole region. He's implemented that. I think he's done some very good things. But again, I think every mayor has the right to pick their own people.
Okay. Another issue that's come up in the mayor's race is the question about the jail that the city maintains. Some candidates think it's a good idea to close it and contract that out to Harris County. Others disagree. I'm curious as to what your position is.
I'm not sure I have a position on what we should do. I think we're going to have to do something. If we stay in the business of doing jail stuff, we need a new facility. I think we probably need to do some fairly major capital investment in getting a lot of things updated and revamped. Certainly, we need to look at whether we have the crime lab, whether that's a regional function or in collaboration with the county, or we do it by ourselves. We've got to have a facility that addresses it. We have a new property room. That's a big step forward. But some of the problems that we've had, whether it's about the jail or whether it's about the crime lab, have been about neglected facilities, just a physical plant. And we've got to do something about that. I would tell you that I would be fine with working with the county to do that. I think what needs to happen is that we need a clear idea of what the logistics are, you know, what the efficiencies are as you process people in and just move them around. And then we need to do what works the best. And I'm not sure we've really done that.
Okay. Let's talk about BARC, the Bureau of Animal Control. I guess the main question that comes to my mind is why we had such trouble with that operation, with that department. It seems like to me like it's been a problem for a while. It's obviously flared up lately. But why has the city had such a hard time getting that on solid footing? And you know, tell me what you think about this new fellow, Fusco, who's been brought in to try and clean it up.
I think it's important to remember that even though they've changed the name to Regulation and Care, what it's really about is our dealing with animals. Original intent was to keep people safe. It was for rabies control and dog bite kinds of things. We collect almost 20,000 dogs, and what would we do with it? You know, we aren't originally about the business of adopting. Now, we're moving toward having those kinds of functions. But if you go out to the facility, you would be blown away at how many animals people in Houston abandon, allow to run loose. You know, you get a story of someone whose dog escapes and they get picked up. That's actually fairly unusual. We have dog attacks, we have bites, we have disease issues, we have feral cats, we have so many animals that people are irresponsible about, and there isn't anyone else dealing with that last resort stuff the city does. So when you're talking about 16,000 animals, where would we put them? And so that's another thing that clearly needs a new facility. But I don't know what kind of facility could really deal with that many animals. We've got to look at another way. We've got to look at having, you know, it costs $125 to license a dog that isn't spayed or neutered, and $5 for a dog that is, and then we give tickets and enforce it and change the culture. And I'm not suggesting even that we do that. I'm telling you that we've got to look at this as a community because we are overrun with dogs and cats, and you would just be astounded at rabbits and hamsters and rats and so you just have to remember that was the intent of that facility. It wasn't to be the SPCA and adopt out dogs. Now, there's no excuse for puppies going down a drain. You know, it is possible to have shelters that have less euthanasia than we do. We need a new facility. I think they're actually pouring new plumbing and pipes and concrete in the bottoms of some of these areas, and I think that the gentleman that the mayor has hired is addressing some of those things. I'm withholding judgment. We haven't voted yet on the rest of his contract. He was hired up to $49,000 for 6 weeks. Let's see how he does. Let's see what he's gotten done. I think that there are people at BARC that have slipped through that didn't have appropriate backgrounds, but I think the majority of folks out there really care about animals and are faced with a heartbreaking situation because, you know, people, when they lose their jobs, when they move, they just walk away from their animals, and we get them. And at some point, we have to figure out what to do with them.
I mean, it seems like a lot of issues, you know, BARC, police, a lot of things ultimately come down to money. You know, the need for new facilities, the need for more police officers, so on and so forth. You know, right now, the city is not exactly flush with money. The budget you know, included cutbacks across the board. You know, what is the, you know, what do we do about this? Again, I've talked to a lot of candidates at this point, and everyone talks about, you know, finding efficiencies and attracting the businesses and so on and so forth. I can't help but think that, you know, we always do that.
Yeah, that's something you said.
Yeah,
I think that rather than finding efficiencies, periodically you have leaps. And technology is probably the biggest driver of that. Like, instead of folks filling out a police report now, you know, and having the courts and having paper move around, you're beginning to have paperless electronic police records. And we didn't do that right the first time. We're working on trying to get it right the second time. But that's a leap where you go from having a bunch of people having to manage paper to having everybody to go online without having to have a clerk or a secretary. You know, that's where you can actually make those leaps that are efficiencies. It's not that there's some pocket where people are refusing to do their job right. So I think you've got to be active in looking for those and figuring out who's doing it better and how do you make the investment now to get a better system and grab it and pull the future forward, you know. Having said that, I probably wouldn't cut taxes every year. Even a few cents that gives somebody back a very small amount has an enormous impact on the city budget. I think we need to look at enterprise funds and things like our water bill and perhaps have things where people can opt in, where they can donate. There was a conversation this morning talking about having some way to allow people to donate to buy trees. Not to charge them for it, but to give them a chance to be able to do it. And there are good and bad things about that. You know, the mayor's office would tell you it may be something different. But, you know, $1 a month on a utility bill would have real payment later, maybe. There are places that charge, like, for trash. You know, if you have recycling and non-recycling garbage disposal, and you have people able to have unlimited stuff in the recycling bin, but you only get one bin for a certain amount of time in the unrecyclable bin, and then you charge over that, it does two things. It provides some revenue, and it pushes you to do the recycling where we can pull some value out of the garbage disposal. So I think we need to do some of those kinds of things. And I think we've got to get better at getting federal and state dollars. We have not done what we need to do with that.
Okay. What advice would you have for a candidate running for office for an at-large position? What should they expect when they step into that kind of office on day one? And how should they approach the job?
I think it's really helpful to realize that you're going to be there maybe, likely, for 6 years, and there's a long game here. And the relationships and the expertise that other people develop are worth something. Most people at the table have a lane or two or three, have some things they focus on, and they're different for different people. You've got somebody worried about quality of life issues, and their thing is science. And someone else doesn't think that's important. They're after parks and after school programs. I think letting people have their lanes is important. I think teaming up with folks, working well with at-larges and district council members where they don't step on each other is important. There are an awful lot of pieces of this that are about playing well with others. But I think the most important thing is to hire really sharp staff and don't cut corners there, because you can't be all do all. And the folks that represent you are the most important thing.
One of the things that's just come up in the news now, since you talked about, you know, being in office for 6 years, is Mayor White has proposed, you know, maybe a review of city's term limits laws, maybe putting a measure on the ballot that would ask the people, do they want to vote on a study of it? It's not a change, but considering a change. What do you think about city's term limits laws, and do you think that we should consider a change to them?
You know, some of that depends on whether you think you're a good council person or not so good. I think there are folks that wouldn't have the opportunity to be on council without term limits. It's it's weighted toward the incumbent just like everything else. And it's very difficult to unelect someone just because. But people have done it, can do it, and probably should do it. And so really the best term limits are citizens that are actively engaged in voting. Having said that, I'm all right with term limits. I think that there's a point where you get stale and you need to do something else. But I think it might be helpful to have two terms at least in the middle. You spend a term figuring out what you're supposed to do, and you spend a term being a lame duck. I think it would be helpful to have more time in the middle to get things done. If you just have a CIP project that you want to see come up, sometimes it takes 10 years, really, to get a bridge done or a library. You aren't even going to be there long enough. So the way it's set up now, there's only a six-year mindset. So you don't have people really looking 10 years out, 15 years out. And we need to do some of that here in Houston. We're going to change quite a bit. We're going to get more dense. We're going to have urban corridors. There's a lot going to be going on, and we need a broader, longer view. But I also think that you lose some institutional knowledge. And if you had two terms in the middle, that would allow you to get some of those things done. If you think someone's terrible, folks don't run against them because in another year or two they're going to be gone. And so that's another 2 years if there's someone that you don't think is appropriate. But I don't think we should gear our system toward poor performance. I think we should gear it toward good performance. You can always vote people out of office. I would probably say, four two-year terms rather than three, or three four-year terms, although I don't like that as well because you end up with that last term still being lame duck. You're not as lame duck until you get closer to the end, but I just think you need to get things done. If the clock's ticking or you're going to run for something else, then you're moving into some other kind of way of thinking.
What should the new mayor's top priority be next year?
I think we need to really focus. I think things like economic downturns, creating jobs, doing some of that, there are things people do to encourage that more than folks realize. I think questions of quality of life and public safety, for example, are really crucial in terms of luring businesses here. I think Houston, though, above and beyond maybe anything, we don't get credit for all the assets and the terrific stuff here that we really have. People think of us as some cow town in the prairie with high humidity, which is totally inaccurate. We're a very sophisticated international city. We've got several airports. We've got major universities. Rice University is number one in quality of life. We really have things here. And I think that the more people know that, the more young people entering careers know that coming here is a good thing, and the more we're able to push our economic can-do forward, the better we're going to do. Houston is primed and really could be an international city, a great international world hub, and we need to pivot on our energy industry and our international community and all of those things to establish our place in the world that way.
Okay. Councilmember Melissa Noriega, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thanks. I appreciate being here.